Much like the word keseth, that unyielding fidelity, steadfast love of the Lord, one of the other words that doesn't always come across in English from the Old Testament, maybe comes across the wrong way, is the phrase, the fear of the Lord. Fear is something that as people, we shun. We don't like it. It's just kind of by definition a bad thing. And I think this is doubly so as modern people. Most of our lives are given over to avoiding fear, to making the fear go away. It's why we love science and medicine so much, because they help us combat our fears. That's why we like the electricity to turn on the light and make the darkness flee. But the fear of the Lord in the Bible is a good thing. And I've heard plenty of brothers who I trust and respect, pastors in the ministry with me, try to explain this by saying something along the lines of, well, it's not really fear. It's like awe. In one sense, they're right. But I just can't bring myself to say it's not really fear. Because awe is something that, well, it's more happy, right? So like, I tell this story too often. If you've heard it before, you'll have to reach through the microphone and punch me in the face. But it's like going to the Grand Canyon. And if I go to the Grand Canyon and I get out of the car and I sit there and I look at the majesty, the wonder, the beauty of what has been wrought by God's creation, and I'll go ahead and just say probably by the flood, that'd be my guess, although there are those who definitely disagree with that. You look at that wonder and you feel awe. But it's a safe awe. There's no threat. There's no danger. There's really no fear at all. Now, if you're standing there looking over that cliff and just marveling at the beauty, and someone comes up behind you and you don't see them and they shake your shoulder a little bit, push you, grab you, but hold you, now you know fear. Now you know how deep the Grand Canyon is. You didn't have to go all the way to the bottom. You got a better idea. Just from that moment, that breath, that snapshot of danger. And the thing about the fear of the Lord in the Old Testament is that it does include danger. It includes knowing with absolute certainty that God is bigger than you. And if God's not dangerous, then he's not bigger than you. Huh? Another story told too often, but it's one of the best ways to explain this. It's from the Chronicles of Narnia. When little Lucy first learns of Aslan, the lion, and she asks Mr. Beaver and Mrs. Beaver, is he a safe lion? And Mr. Beaver gets a bit of a little shiver. He says, oh, no, 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 he's not a safe lion, but he's good. That's kind of the key to the fear of the Lord. It's not fear. It certainly is related to awesomeness and wonder and power and might and majesty and dominion and all those things. But it actually is with its own little dose of terror, but it's a good terror. It's the terror of knowing that the lion could eat you, but then also knowing that he won't, because he doesn't want to, because he's good. And it's that in mind then that leads Solomon to say, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. This right, meet, good terror at knowing who God is, not because you're a sinner, but because he's God and you're his creature. And you go look up awesome in an old dictionary, you'll find out it doesn't mean happy either. It doesn't mean good. It doesn't mean great. It means terrifying. The awesomeness of God, which the song just doesn't cut it. When it says, our God's an awesome God, it means happy. It means, yay, we're all happy here with God. No. I mean, yes, we are. Don't get me wrong. We are. But the word, our God is an awesome God, in the Old Testament, is our God is a God worthy of being feared, and for that reason, worthy of being trusted and capable of saving you from something as terrifying as the devil. A fallen archangel whose mind and eye are set on you to tear you, to rip you from the hand of God. Only a God you fear has the power to actually stop that from happening. And that's why it's so good to know. And why all faith begins with this simplicity. There is a God and you are not him. And that's a capital G and an almighty and a capable of destroying you, worthy of being feared. You are not him. But wisdom is what he gives. Wisdom is what he delivers. Steadfast love is his identity. Right? So you have that juxtaposition that Dr. Luther brings out in the explanation of the first commandment, and then all the other explanations after that. What does this mean to have no other gods? It is to fear and love. And then I think he throws in trust just this one time, because that's what it means, both those things, fear and love, and trust in God above all things. Now Solomon continues in chapter 1 of Proverbs, which I quoted earlier. He says, "Hear," meaning listen, "my son. Listen to your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. For they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." This is him saying, "My son, my child whom I love, I want to give you the one thing that is more valuable than all. I want to give you the fear of the Lord. I want to give you true wisdom. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us, lie with us for blood,' let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like the grave, let us swallow them alive, and like those who go down to the pit, let us take them whole. Come, cast in your lot with us." My son, Solomon says, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such is the one who does not fear the Lord, who seeks to build castles made of sand in this dark and evil age, who thinks that even if there is a God, he's just a pretty thing, a happy thing that has no justice, has no righteousness, has no wrath, has no terror, and therefore has no power to save. How much better in a world like ours to have a God who, good shepherd that he is, has a rod and a staff for fending off the wolf, who has a sword from his mouth that cuts down the wicked, even the wickedness within your heart, who all the more so, in perhaps the most terrifying thing of all, laid down his very life for you, giving himself as the ransom price to restore you to a place where you could, because of grace, because of the freedom in which you stand, learn once again to fear the Lord.